logo appears in bold slanting letters over a green planet in space. Turner. Now a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now in a black-and-white film, a rush of water sweeps over a deck, then recedes, revealing titles. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Victor Fleming's production of Rudyard Kipling's Captain's Courageous. Copyright 1937. Another wave crashes and recedes with Freddie Bartholomew, Spencer Tracy, Lionel Barrymore, Melvin Douglas. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Kerry Danahy, Dutch Priest, and Justin Soule. Read by Nathan Carlson. For more about description, call DBS at 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at access.wgbh.org. Directed by Victor Fleming. Produced by Louis D. Light. Screenplay by John Lee Mann, Mark Conley, and Dale Van Every. Cast: Freddie Bartholomew as Harvey, Spencer Tracy as Manuel, Lionel Barrymore as Disco, Melvin Douglas as Mr. Chain, Charlie Grapewin as Uncle Salters, Mickey Rooney as Dan, John Carradine as Long Jack, Oscar O'Shea as Cushman, Jack LaRue as Priest, Walter Kingsford as Dr. Finley, Donald Briggs as Tyler, Sam McDaniels as Doc, Billy Bird as Charles. Now columns line the facade of a stately mansion. In the kitchen, a maid sets three breakfast trays. A butler enters and removes a small pitcher from one of them.
There'll be none of that. No trays.
The butler enters the dining room, where a man reads a newspaper to another.
The Star-Telegram has you quoted quite definitely. Before departing by plane for New York, Mr. Chain stated that the new equipment is to be provided by the present bond issue. The other papers have virtually the same.
What's a confidential bulletin say?
Tuesday morning, Ferris wires the president will probably sign the Bannerman mining bill today. Van Wyck's London cable says conservatives will support the new air program. Tokyo.
As his assistant reads, Mr. Chain hurriedly eats pancakes.
Our property loss in Altoona factory fire will amount to not more than $15,000.
8:45, Mr. Chain.
The butler and Mr. Chain's assistant follow him into the foyer.
Our guest still asleep?
Yes, sir. Reynolds will drive him up to Connecticut at 11 o'clock, sir.
Oh, we'll let them sleep an hour more.
Very good, sir. Will you be dining at home tonight?
I don't know. You can call me at the office.
Very good, sir.
Burns, give this to my son. Have him call me at the office on the private wire.
Very well, sir.
He hands the butler some money and leaves. A second butler turns to the first.
Shall I waken them now, Mr. Burns?
No, Mr. Chain wants the dear things to sleep an hour longer. They can never wake up as far as I'm concerned.
The maid picks up the phone.
Yes, Master Harvey? Well, Burns said that... Oh, here he is now.
Burns takes the phone.
Yes? Your breakfast will be ready in the dining room, Master Harvey. Yes, but... Oh, very well. It wants its breakfast in its rooms. Prepare the tray.
In a bedroom, four boys talk.
Why can't I go downstairs and eat my breakfast if I'm hungry?
Is that the way you act in people's houses?
In people's houses, they let you eat when you're hungry.
Well, you're my guest and you'll do as I say. Besides, I bet you never had breakfast in bed.
My mother has it, but it's sissy for a fella to have it unless he's sick.
Who are you calling a sissy?
I'll take care of it. Did you say I was a sissy?
I said some people might think eating off of trays was sissy.
Well, let's get something to eat anyway, huh, Harvey?
You had me order it. Go ahead, Charles. It'll be in your room. You want to have some breakfast, don't you?
Yes. I like to eat the way people eat.
Will mine be in my room?
Sure. I think we only got one servant.
The boys start to leave.
Wait a minute, Fogey. What do you want to go around making him mad for?
What if he is?
You just can't remember one single thing. Getting my father to get his father to make him spend the Easter with us was a plot, wasn't it?
Yes.
Come in. Well, then, what do you want to go around spoiling plots for?
I just wanted to make him feel he owed you something.
Burns enters with a tray.
Could you get coffee if you wanted it?
Sure, I just don't like it. Do you want some?
No, I like cocoa.
As Pogey leaves, Burns sets the tray on Harvey's lap and hands him the money.
Your father instructed me to give you this.
What for?
He didn't confide in me. You're going to telephone him if you get up. Is there anything more you wish?
Yes, you can fill my bath for me.
With pleasure.
Now in Charles.
I thought you were in bed.
No, and I'm going to eat mine on that desk.
Are you sorry Easter's over?
I don't know.
Haven't you been having a lot of fun?
I guess so.
You're the one that's from Providence, aren't you?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'd think a boy from Providence would be very happy to make a trip to New York. I'm from way out in Indiana.
All right.
I've got a little brother that I bet he'd be happy to have all the luxuries you've had.
He can have my room.
In another bedroom, the third guest, Alvin, finishes his breakfast. Meanwhile, Harvey combs his dark, wavy hair as he talks on the phone.
Hello. Hello, Father?
Just a moment. I'll see if your father's in.
In his office, Mr. Chain takes the phone.
Morning, son. What?
I'm going back to school now. Yes, sir. $40.
That's it. I thought you might have stopped for lunch somewhere before you get back to school. You can treat the boys. Have a good time, son. See you in June. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Father.
Mr. Chain looks at a photo on his desk.
Ah, he's a wonderful boy. He was 5 here. I wish his mother had lived to see him now. 10 years old, and yet he's one of the editors of his school paper.
Now Harvey lies on his back and balances a small dog on his feet.
Now watch. Sit up, Conrad. Do you hear me? Sit up.
Charles looks at a book.
Sit up!
Hey! This is no way my Treasure Island looks.
Harvey lets the dog drop to the ground.
The very first way anybody ever saw Treasure Island.
Gee, it's very valuable, huh?
Sure. Would you like to have it?
It belongs to your father.
It does not. My father gave it to me so as I could have it when I grow up. You take it as a present, Charles.
You're going now.
Gee whiz.
Harvey winks at Pogey. Now all 4 boys sit in the back seat of a car.
I'm glad you like the book, Charles.
Look, Harvey, maybe I oughtn't to take it.
That's all right. That's just an act of friendship. Sometime maybe you'll want to do an act of friendship for us.
What?
Ooh, maybe we might like to join the Buffaloes. You're the president of the Buffaloes, aren't you?
Yeah, but there's 15 other fellas in the club.
Yeah, but when you get together in Mr. Tyler's room and toast marshmallows and things, you talk about who you're going to let in, don't you?
I'm not allowed to tell what we do.
That's all you do. You sit around Mr. Tyler's fireplace and talk about camping and things like that.
Well, do you want to do an act of friendship?
What if the others don't want you in?
Now look here, Charles. You like being the president, don't you?
Certainly I do. It's an office of honor.
Mm-hmm. Well, what if you want the president anymore?
You can't do anything about it.
Oh, yes, I can. What if you want the school anymore?
I'm going to be at the school.
Harvey could buy the school and shut it up, couldn't you, Harvey?
No, that isn't what would happen. Your father sells my father's automobiles in Providence, doesn't he?
Yes.
Well, then, do you think he'd like it if you had a chance to do me an act of friendship and didn't do it? What if he woke up one day and my father took away all the automobiles he let him have to sell and said, "You're fired." You know how many people are out of jobs? Millions of people. And they're all hungry and in rags. They can't send their sons to school. You're not old enough to work, so you'd have to go out with your mother and father and beg. And that certainly would be awful, to have your mother sitting there all dressed up in rags and eating rotten bread and things like that. Wouldn't that be terrible?
Your father can't do that.
Now look, Charles, I don't want him to do it. I just say I don't want him to have to do it.
I know they won't let you in.
Now a stone sign reads Green Hill School. Inside, the teachers meet.
Which will replace Dr. Spitzer's science section, moved up to Friday afternoon. That will give Dr. Spitzer more time for golf. Thank you. Thank you. That covers everything, gentlemen. We'll reconvene at tomorrow night's regular faculty meeting.
Reconvene after all.
Oh, Mr. Tyler.
Yes, sir.
A tall, mustached man approaches.
Harrison's doctor feels he needs another month's rest. Could you possibly take over first form Latin?
Oh, I think so.
I thought you might like what added salary the extra work would bring.
Well, that's very kind of you, Dr. Fenley.
Did you get straightened away from last winter's difficulties all right?
Oh, yes, and now that you've brought that up, I don't know quite how to thank you for...
Oh, don't mention it, Bob. This ought to make things easier from now on.
Yes, sir, and thank you very much, sir.
Glad to do it, Bob.
Charles paces outside Dr. Finley's office as Mr. Tyler exits.
Hello, Charles. What's the matter?
Can Harvey Chain make his father do anything he wants?
Well, I don't think so. Why?
He says if we don't let him and Pokey Williams and Alvin Savage join the Buffaloes, I'll have to leave school.
What?
I don't know what to do with this. He gave it to me. It's awful valuable and he won't take it back.
Mr. Tyler looks at the richly bound book.
He gave you this?
He says if he doesn't get in the Buffaloes, he'll get his father to take away my father's automobile business.
Oh, that's absurd, child.
Well, he wanted to be on the school paper. He got his father to give a new printing press, didn't he? So they had to let him on, didn't they? He's always...
Come in here, Charles. Come in here.
Now Harvey types out an article titled Easter Vacation Doings. It reads, a very luxurious vacation was spent by Charles Jameson, Pogey Williams, and Alvin Savage, who were the guests of Harvey Chain Esquire in his luxurious mansion in New York.
Come on, we've got to set type up now. There isn't room for any more.
What do you write?
Spider's vacation.
I want more than this in.
There isn't room for any more. If you'd wanted more, you ought to write it sooner. Give it here.
The boy takes the article.
Hey, give that here. I want to write some more.
We told Mr. Tyler he could read proof at 5 o'clock.
I don't care. You treat me like I wasn't one of the editors here.
Oh, you use like as a conjunction.
I did not.
Oh, yes, you did. That makes 10 cents more you owe to the Dutch boss.
Yeah, and you still haven't paid up for saying neither or instead of neither nor down at the dining hall this noon.
Mr. Tyler enters.
Come on, you're awful slow with that proof. It's not ready yet, Mr. Tyler.
Yeah, so I assume. You have half an hour. Come here, Harvey. I want to talk with you.
Harvey follows Mr. Tyler into the hall.
Staffholder's late. They wouldn't let me.
Harvey, I put that first edition of Treasure Island in your room.
Oh, you did? Thanks.
It was a nice gift, but Charles didn't think you ought to take such an expensive present, and I'm inclined to agree with him.
Oh, that's all right. I want him to have it.
Why, Harvey?
Well, it's... We don't need it. We've got lots of them.
Harvey, you know that's a silly answer, old man.
Well, it was an act of friendship.
You mean a bribe, don't you?
What's a bribe?
A bribe's a dishonest gift. The person who accepts it knows that he must do something dishonest in return. Be honest, Harvey.
All I wanted was to belong to the Buffaloes. Look, people give presents after someone's been nice to them, don't they? So what's dishonest with giving presents before someone's nice to you?
Harvey, why do you think you don't belong to the Buffaloes?
Because Charles don't want me in.
It isn't Charles that kept you out. I kept you out.
What? You said you were a friend of mine.
I am. But sometimes we have to do things for friends that we don't particularly like to do. Harvey, you remember me saying it hadn't been wise for you to tell the boys that you ought to be a member simply because your father was so important?
Yes.
And I said the way to get in was for you to be important, to stand on your own feet, not depend on your father for everything you want.
My father gives me everything I want.
Did you talk this over with your father, Harvey?
No, he's got more important things to do.
He's anxious for your happiness, isn't he?
Sure. I'm perfectly happy.
Oh, no, Harvey, you're not, because you know you've been dishonest.
Well, so are you dishonest.
Now, Harvey.
Well, you took a bribe.
What are you talking about?
Didn't you find some money in your room a couple of days before Christmas vacation, lying on your table in an envelope?
What?
Yes, only it wasn't a bribe. It was a present, because I thought you were a friend of mine.
Did you put that $50 there?
Yes. I was going to tell you it was from me. I thought maybe you'd make the history exam easier. You went to the dentist and came back late, and I didn't get a chance to tell you.
I had no idea it was from you.
You kept it, though.
It'll be returned, Harvey. I'm afraid you need a little sterner lesson than I can give you.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to talk about it with Dr. Finley and see what he thinks ought to be done.
Now a notice reads, Harvey Chain is placed in Coventry for 48 hours.
Where's Coventry?
It isn't a place. It means he can't talk to anybody and you can't talk to him. You just have to pretend he doesn't exist. And if he tries to talk to you, you have to report it to a master.
What did he do?
I don't know. He's a fresh kid, that's all.
Now in Mr. Tyler's classroom, a boy stands before the class.
Take thou there from my brand Excalibur and fling him far into the middle mare. Watch what thou seest and lightly bring me word. To him, replied De Bull, Sir Bedivere.
The boy takes his seat.
Well, what did Sir Bedivere say?
That's all I was supposed to commit, sir. 10 lines.
Does anybody know what Sir Bedivere replied?
Yeah, we'll have to find out tomorrow.
I know what he said, sir.
Persons in Coventry do not speak after a class is dismissed.
Harvey watches as Mr. Tyler and the other boys gather up their books and file out of the room. In the hall, Harvey marches angrily behind a student and Mr. Tyler.
Kind of funny about Eddie stopping where he did.
Yes, yes, it was.
Harvey slows to a stop and glares at them as they continue down the hall. As Harvey starts to walk away, he turns his gaze toward a closed door. His brow furrowed, he opens it. Inside, three boys work at the printing press. Harvey takes a page off the machine. As one boy tries to snatch it back, the blonde boy motions for him not to. Harvey turns to him.
I guess I got a right to look at it, haven't I? The only reason you got your old paper was because I got it for you. You make me sick.
Punching somebody isn't speaking to him, is it?
No.
The boy punches Harvey, knocking him down.
All you gotta do is say he tried to break Coventry with you.
Takes some people an awful long time to learn something.
As the boys leave, Harvey stares after them with tears in his eyes. His jacket is splattered with ink. He wipes a drop of blood from under his nose, then smears it across his cheek. As he gets to his feet, he looks down at his ink-stained clothes. He wipes at the ink spots, then dips his hand in a puddle of dark ink and smears it over his jacket. Now in New York City, Harvey stands at a taxi's window as the driver counts out his change.
It'll only cost you $10 if you want to go back.
I'm never going back.
Harvey storms toward a building labeled Chain Building. Later, Mr. Chain enters his office.
What's up? What's happened?
I just
Harvey limps
you.
Toward his father.
I'm all right, I guess.
What's the matter with your leg?
Oh, it's all right. I just sprained it a little.
Here, sit down.
Mr. Chain presses an intercom button on his desk.
Yes, Mr. Chain?
Ask Dr. Walsh to come in.
Oh, I don't need a doctor, Father.
What's all this, tar?
It's ink from the printing press. A little of it got on me. I left school.
A man enters.
Dick, I wish you'd see if this boy of mine's all right.
Well, son, been in a fight?
I fell down trying to escape.
Oh. Take a look at that right leg. What do you mean, trying to escape?
It doesn't hurt now.
Can you walk on it?
Yes, sir. It was just a ligament or something.
I think you'll pull through. What happened to him?
I'm trying to find out. Why do you say you escaped, Harvey?
Because they had me prisoner at the school. Nobody could talk to me. I guess they were scared I would talk.
Who was scared?
That old Tyler and all of them.
Who's old Tyler?
He's a master. And he kept me out of the Buffaloes and took a bribe.
What bribe?
I gave him $50 at Christmas to make the history exam easier. And yesterday I found out he wasn't a friend of mine. He fixed it so as I couldn't tell anyone.
Let me get this straight, son. Do you mean to say that a teacher let you give him $50?
Yes.
And then locked you up because you threatened to tell about it?
Yes, in the basement. I had to fight my way out.
Good heavens, what school is this?
Green Hill, Connecticut. Does Dr. Finley know about this?
Sure he does. He's trying to keep it quiet, too. He's scared because you gave so much to the school.
He turns to an assistant.
It's very important that Dr. Finley be at my house this evening. I also want to see that teacher, Tyler.
Yes, sir.
Maybe you won't have anything at all to do with them,
Father. You just let me handle this, son.
I bet they make up some awful lies about it.
Later, at home, Harvey listens from the staircase.
Money that he's had at his disposal. Very large sums for a small boy.
Well, the boy was confused, bewildered, almost terrified when he came into my office. Your mere assertion that I give him over large sums of spending money in no way seems to justify the severe treatment to which he's obviously been subjected.
Mr. Chain, Harvey's severe treatment came from no member of the faculty. I've told you his attempt to bribe Mr. Tyler. Here's the 50, by the way. Behind that lies a long list of infractions based on his attitude that he's a special, privileged character. His attempt to resist the normal, healthy discipline of being put into Coventry brought no further discipline from us, but it did bring him a solid bash on the nose from one of his fellows. It was a blow, I'm sorry to say, that any one of the other 120 boys in the school would have been glad to deliver.
Mr. Chain smirks.
Oh.
On the stairs, Harvey strains to hear.
Well, in that case, have some coffee, Dr. Findlay.
Thanks.
Well, tell me, this bash on the nose came from a bison?
A buffalo. Wellman is a buffalo, isn't he?
Yes, sir.
Oh. Perhaps you'll accept some coffee, too, Mr. Tyler.
Thank you, sir. Really, Mr. Chain, Harvey's great material. He's simply been misdirected, that's all. Smart, why, he has a mind as fine as any in the school.
Well, he certainly fooled me. It seems that I've begotten a sort of junior Machiavelli.
Perhaps it's not my place to say this, Mr. Chain, but it's simply because you and he have never had any relationship. To him, you're just a machine pouring out money, a machine he's trying to imitate. If you take time out from being a tycoon in big business and spend more time getting to know your own son, you'll realize...
Mr. Chain realizes that very clearly now, Bob.
Oh, I can see that the school would do with a little more cooperation with me, yes. But you gentlemen must realize that besides being both father and mother to Harvey, I'm tied up in my own work. In matters that also relate to his future welfare. I suppose what you want from me, Dr. Findlay, is permission to deal as drastically with Harvey as his future conduct might deserve.
I'm afraid we'll have to leave that in your hands for a while, Mr. Chain. For the rest of the spring term, at least, Harvey will have to be rusticated.
Rusticated?
Temporarily canned, I believe the boys call it.
Oh. Well, that is news, and here I'm trying to put you on the carpet.
It seems a bit thick. After the printing press and all your other generosities. But for that very reason, for the effect on the other boys.
Oh, I understand perfectly, Doctor. You've no other course.
Well, Bob, if we're going to catch that train, we must be off.
Goodbye, Mr. Chain.
Harvey rushes upstairs.
When Harvey comes back in the fall, you'll be a boy that we can all be proud of.
The gentlemen exit into the foyer.
Well, good luck. My young Mr. Tyler is pretty intense, but he's quite right. You're rather a nice fellow for a... What did he call you?
A tycoon.
Oh, yes. Well, you're rather a nice fellow for a tycoon. So take the boy in with you for the next few months, will you? You won't mind the extra work. If you give him a chance to live up to you, we are liable to have another splendid citizen on our hands. Good night.
Good night, Doctor. Thank you.
They shake hands. Mr. Chain watches Dr. Findlay leave, then heads up a wide carpeted staircase. Upstairs, Harvey peeks out from his room. He quickly closes the door as he spots his father reach the top of the stairs. With a stern frown, Mr. Chain opens Harvey's bedroom door and sticks his head into the dark room.
Harvey.
He steps inside and walks over to Harvey's bed. The boy lies under the covers with his eyes closed.
Don't, Mr. Tyler.
Please don't. Don't.
2 hours ago, you might have gotten away with that very nicely, Harvey. From now on, it doesn't go. That's all we'll have to say tonight, son.
Mr. Chain pulls Harvey's sheets up over his shoulders. As he exits, Harvey lifts his head off the pillow and frowns toward the door. Now Mr. Chain enters his room, where his valet waits.
Elliot, I'm going to be a father again.
Good heavens, Mr. Chain.
No, Elliot. No, it's just that it seems that smart little boys from so-called wealthy, well-bred parents don't grow up very successfully by themselves.
If you're speaking of Harvey, sir...
Yes, I am. Did you get passage for next week?
Yes, the Queen Anne on the 7th. You wanted to go over the London Corporation papers before you retire.
Yeah, well, get a larger suite. Harvey's going with us. It seems that he's been, rusticated.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Will you be taking a tutor along with him?
So how the deuce did you know what that meant?
Frankly, I jumped at an obvious conclusion.
Well, you're smarter than I was, Elliot. No tutors. I've got to get closer to that boy. I'm darned if I know just where to begin.
Mr. Chain bites his lower lip.
Poor kid. Maybe it's all my fault. I don't know. Oh, well. I'll make it somehow.
Now an ocean liner moves through thick fog. On deck, Harvey stands with his father.
Well, if the radio tells them where every ship is, what do they have
to... Radiogram, Mr. Chain.
No, thanks. What, Harvey?
I said if the radio tells them where all the ships are, what do they have to keep on blowing that old foghorn all the time for?
We're off the Grand Banks now. A lot of small fishing boats out there, too small for a radio. They don't want to hit any of them.
I bet this boat could go right through one of them.
Mm.
What do they have to come so far out from the land to fish for?
Huh? Well, this is where they get all the codfish and halibut off these banks.
Those boys wouldn't believe you owned this boat.
Why, don't, Harvey. I'm just one of the directors of the line.
Well, you're the chairman, so that's the boss, isn't it?
Look, son, why don't you have some fun with these kids for a while? I've got a radio to send, and then, later on, I'll pick you up and we'll go up on the captain's bridge, huh?
Harvey approaches two boys.
Hear that? My father's taking me up to see the captain when he gives him some orders later on.
Bourgeois.
I'll play your boat.
Can't you see we're already playing?
All right, then I think I'll get an ice cream soda.
You can't.
Soda fountain doesn't open till noon. Oh, no, we'll see about that.
Now, behind the soda fountain, a steward puts on his jacket.
Well, are you the three important customers?
Yes. Have you any money?
I got a dime.
That's not enough. We have three chocolate ice cream sodas. Make them big ones.
You know, we're not supposed to open till noon, don't you?
You've got nothing else to do.
Oh, of course. You'd know all about that.
I know everything about this ship. I've been all over it.
Meet with your approval?
It's all right.
Crew would be glad to know that.
The steward serves each of the boys a large ice cream soda. They dig in.
All right, drink them up, boys, and don't take all day, huh?
There's no hurry. We're going to have another.
This'll be enough for me. Me, too.
Ah, what's the matter with you? I could have five or six of these.
Yes, you could.
You bet I can. Make another.
But I'll be glad to make them for you, even though I know you can.
Yeah, I'll show you.
Now the steward makes soda after soda. As the two boys look at each other skeptically, Harvey stares ahead, wide-eyed, and downs his soda with a straw. Now six empty soda glasses sit before Harvey.
There. You didn't think I could do it, did you?
That's fine. You certainly surprised me.
As Harvey gets off the stool, he wobbles queasily.
I think I'll go meet my father now.
That's the boy. And go and eat a great big lunch now.
Look, he's getting sick. He's gonna be sick.
Oh, I hadn't counted on that.
I am not. I feel fine. I can go and meet my father if I want to, can't I?
The boys watch Harvey walk out unsteadily.
Come on, I'll bet you anything.
In the hallway, Harvey approaches a porter.
Which way is it to the deck? How do I get outdoors?
First to your right.
The boys spot him.
Hurry, Paul, come on.
Harvey walks out onto the deck in the foggy air. The boys follow. Harvey quickly hides behind a lifeboat on the side of the ship as the boys search the deck.
Hey, Harvey!
Harvey stumbles backward and falls overboard. As he disappears into the choppy water, the ship glides on. Harvey surfaces, gasping for air. Behind him, a rowboat appears in the fog. Inside, a fisherman wears a knit cap over his dark, curly hair.
Ooh! Ooh!
He scowls at the ship.
You try run Manuel down, huh? You big killer whale with smoke spot, you try swallow Manuel like he little smelt, huh? Ooh! Ooh! That's all you ever got to say. Ooh, ooh.
Manuel continues rowing.
On the Isle of Tishomingo lived the chief called Bingo Bingo. Oh, what?
He spots Harvey.
What's this?
Manuel quickly rows toward the unconscious boy, then pulls Harvey into his boat.
That whale she have camp, huh? Little pool camp, too. All full of ocean inside. Here. Here, come on now. I'd pull you out of ocean, now you give some of that ocean back. Come on now.
He tips Harvey
give
upside
back.
Down.
Come on, give back.
Manuel lays Harvey back down.
15 years I've been fishing, man. First time I ever catch fish like you.
He blows into a conch shell. Later, Manuel rows his boat toward a long fishing schooner with two masts.
Aye, aye! Aboard the vessel! Aye! I bring you a new kind of fish! What'd you get?
Two older men watch as Manuel steers his boat alongside the schooner.
He got no tail. He got pants on his dorsal fin. I think maybe he's about 10 years old.
Ah, it's a kid, ain't it?
Go on, tend your bell.
What's that?
You know better than leave your watch, especially in the fog. Go on, tend your bell.
Lend a hand here, Ollie.
The fishermen pull Harvey aboard.
I pump him out a little bit. I guess maybe he needs more pumping in, I think, huh?
Get a boy, Kay.
Manuel boards the schooner.
Roll him. He must have fell off that liner.
Sure, he no like that big foolish ooh-ooh. He come visit Manuel.
He got more in salt water than he made it.
Now in the crew's quarters, Harvey sleeps in a small bunk. His eyes blink open and his gaze darts around the room. He slowly lifts his head off the pillow and spots a black cook at a stove. Harvey's brow furrows.
Where is this?
Oh, you's awake? How's you feeling, boy?
I fell, didn't I? Did you pull me out of the water?
No, Manuel. He fished you both.
Well, who are you?
I was Doc. I was the cook. How's your throat feel?
Awful.
Always do. Take some of this and you feel better.
Doc hands Harvey a steaming mug and the boy takes a sip.
Oh, that's worse. What smells so bad?
Smells? Ain't nothing smells bad around here. Oh, you means the fish. But they ain't got no smell. Them's nice, clean salt fish. 70 kennels already done salted down in that pole hole.
Is this the bottom of the ship? Well, where's my father?
Was your pappy overboard with you, too?
Oh, this is some other boat.
That's it. We done picked you up.
Oh, where are my shoes? I've got to see the captain.
Back here.
Harvey follows Doc across the room. His bare legs show under a baggy shirt.
Here you is.
You reckon you're pert enough to hop on deck?
You find the captain and tell him to come down here.
I reckon you're lucky he didn't hear you say that.
Where are my clothes?
It is, and they ain't dry. Boy, you'd better...
Where's the captain?
Up on deck.
Harvey starts up the stairs.
You sure is a tonic to yourself.
Harvey steps up on deck and approaches an old fisherman.
How do you do, son? So you slipped from your mooring. Going to stay with us a while. You look like a spring herring now, but you're going to fatten up before the fall.
I don't know what you're talking about. Where's the captain?
Aft.
As Harvey walks toward the stern in his shoes and baggy shirt, he steps over a pile of fish on the deck. At the helm, he approaches the captain, a teenaged boy, and another crewman.
How do I get to the captain?
You got to him. Well, how are you feeling, sonny?
You mean you're the captain of this boat?
That's a general opinion.
How long would it take you to get to Europe?
Well, I don't know, sonny. I never tried to sail there.
Well, I want you to take me there. I've got to meet my father.
Well, that's a pity, because I'm afraid it can't be done.
All right, then. Take me to New York.
I don't think you understand, sonny. We're working off the Grand Banks. This schooner's from Gloucester, Massachusetts. We'll take you there when we're through fishing.
But I don't want to go to Gloucester.
You don't? Well, now.
Is he the captain?
We let him think he is.
Maybe he'd like to be captain, Dad.
Oh, that'll do, Donald. I know you want to get home, son, but we're out here to catch fish. And we ain't going to leave here till we catch enough to fill the fore and after hole.
See, look. My father...
author is Frank Burton Shane. Oh, don't you believe me?
I don't doubt you know your own daddy's name.
But we'll pay you if you take me to him. Don't you want to make some money?
Well, that's what we're hoping to do, catching fish.
But he's rich. He can buy more fish than you ever saw. Why, he owns the boat I fell off.
You mean the miner?
Yes, he practically owns it.
Might have been the fall that done it.
Dory's in, sir.
Now you take it easy, sons.
Now you've got to listen to
Daniel, me. Uncle Saunders will take the bell. You take him down below and let him bend on some of your clothes. No matter what course we set, son, you can't tack around like that. Then you go and rest a little more.
Now, what's your name?
Harvey Ellsworth Shane.
Well, mine's Dan. Come on down below.
Harvey follows Dan below deck to the crew's quarters.
So how'd you fall off that boat in a calm?
There was a storm coming down.
This morning there wasn't no storm. This morning it was a flat calm.
Well, I don't know.
I ain't been no more than a little swell all day. Wait till we get a rough day out here.
What do you call a rough day?
When she's putting most of her cabin house underwater. Here, put these on.
He hands him long johns.
Well, you see some of the places we go.
What places?
Oh, Stone Fence, St. Pierre's Bank, Whale Deep, Virgin Rock. Pop gets it right along with the fish. Folks say he thinks like a codfish.
Well, thinking like a codfish is going to get me where I want to get. I don't care how he thinks.
Pop, don't make no hasty judgments.
Hey, these are the worst clothes I ever saw. This stuff itches.
Wait till you wear them for a little while. They'll shrink to your tummy. Come on, get the stuff on. Dory's in.
That's got nothing to do with me.
On deck, several dories unload hundreds of fish.
Well, those ain't 50-pounders. They're 4-ounce-pounders.
The scaly fish slide around as some of the fishermen pile them on top of one another. Other men cut the fish heads off with long knives, then gut them. Manuel points to a fisherman unloading his fish from his half-empty dory.
Yes, sir.
Look, Longjack. He's got such few fish, they die of loneliness, I think.
You did better, maybe?
Ah, wait, you see what I get. I get fish with hair on him.
Harvey approaches wearing a wide-brim fisherman's hat.
Ah, they're my new kind of fish. How you feel, little fish?
Hey, are you going to cut off all these old fishing stuff before we get going? I want to get to my father.
Well, it'll be some little time yet, son. Stay easy on that salt, Henry.
When?
It's just like you said, Tom. They're running kind of smallish. About 3 months, huh?
3 months?
When we head into Gloucester with a full load of fish, we'll help you find your folks.
But I want to get going right away.
Excuse me, son. It was them sharks ravenous today. Like stole all my gear.
Hey, can't you understand me?
Now, look here, sonny. I've been close-hauling your problem, and I want to help you. But we got our problems, too. All of us here sharing the fishing. And heading back to Gloucester now, we'd maybe lose all next winter's daily bread for us and our folks.
You wouldn't want
that now, would you?
The captain walks away.
Are you crazy? I told you my father had more money
than... Ice away, Jack.
Are you going to listen to me, or don't you understand?
Dang right, boy.
A guy pulls Harvey aside as workers hoist aboard a dory labeled, "The We're Here." Harvey turns to the captain.
Hey, if you think I'm going to stay on this boat for 3 months...
Now, look here, son. I don't blame you none. Now, you won't me either after the bile's out of your system. And even if your daddy was half what you say, 'twouldn't be right nor just to gamble 2 weeks good fishing agin a yarn give out by an upset boy. But I'm a fair-minded man, and while you're aboard, I'll pay you wages. $3 a month.
$3?
Now, come on, Tony. You start helping Dan with them cod livers. Here's a pair of gloves.
We wash them off first, then we put them in there. And after we get the bucket full, then we put them in the barrel. That's how we get cod liver oil.
You think I'd do that?
Here. They won't hurt you, little fish.
Hey, you heard Pop's orders. You're one of the crew now.
I am not, and I'm not going to work on this boat. Nobody can make me either.
Hey, Disco, you hear this?
Come on now. Don't be scared, little
fish. You keep away from me. All of you keep away from me. None of you can make me do anything.
Hey, Disco. You got mutiny on board.
If you don't want to help, just keep quiet.
When I get off this boat, I'm going to get my father to put you all in jail. You're a lot of kidnappers.
Well, I guess there ain't nothing else to do.
I bet they put you all in jail. In jail for the rest of your lives, and I'm going to do it, too.
Captain Disco whacks Harvey upside the head.
You hit me.
Now, you just sit there and think about it, son, eh?
Sitting on a pile of fish, Harvey rubs his cheek. Manuel watches him.
Ah, look at Manuel. He's saving fish to sleep on. Catch up there.
Hey, I do more work as you do with your best girl six brother.
As Harvey sits in a daze, a fish is tossed on his lap. Now moonlight shines on the ocean and silhouettes the schooner. On deck, Captain Disco approaches Harvey.
Now mind what I told you, son. You're too young to be telling the crew of men what you'll do and what you won't do. But you might as well start in learning a few things. You see that gurry?
He points to fish heads.
Well, when you bolt them fish heads overside, you can come below and get some supper. Until you do, you get nothing.
I'm not going to eat either.
Disco bites off the end of his pipe and spits it out.
You do as you mind about that.
Disco heads below and joins the rest of the crew around a large table.
Hey, let it rain some more coffee, huh, Doc?
Fog's lifting. It'll be clear in an hour.
How's my little fish? Smiling and happy?
Nah, he's still sulking. He's the ornery's kid I ever see.
Well, maybe his papa got so much money he don't want that little boy no more, huh? Maybe he'd throw him overboard, huh?
He sure spins a yarn for a kid.
Right, his papa owned that boat.
Yeah, interesting talk, all right. Why, he's a good enough liar to write books.
A rope's end, that's what I'd give him.
I tell you, it was the fall he took that did it. It plumb distracted him. My cousin Evan back from Vermont was like that. He fell off of a barn, and he played with rag dolls for 30 years.
If you want what I think, as soon as this fog lifts, we'll take him into St. John's.
Yeah.
I mean it.
And lose 2 weeks good fishing, huh?
Better than taking a chance on 3 months' bad luck.
Now we have plenty sunshine for Mr. Appyface.
He's a passenger on a fishing schooner. You know that's bad luck. What happened to the Orinoco last year when they took on the passenger Newfoundland? On the way home, 2 men get killed. They don't get hardly a candle of fish.
By golly, that's true.
My brother was on the Bedford once.
There was a passenger on the Dorothy Clemens when she got rammed by the liner.
Well, that's nothing. There's lots of vessels lost out of Gloucester, never had no passenger on board. I was a passenger on my father's boat. I never brought him no bad luck. Daniel here.
Your older son ain't being a passenger. Skipper, when we trawled this bank last year, it was nothing but dories loaded to the gunwales. This kid comes aboard this morning, and look at today's catch.
Now, look here. Wait a minute. There ain't no passenger on board.
Why not?
Well, I made him a member of the crew. Well, it stands to reason. If I'm paying him wages, he ain't no passenger, don't it?
No, sir. You can't just buy Jonas off that way. I hold he's still a passenger long as he ain't done no work.
Yeah, and Jack's right.
Well, he'll work as soon as he gets hungry.
What's going to happen between now and the time he does?
Now, look here. I decided this. Manuel's responsible for him being on board, so you got to put him to work.
Me?
Yeah.
You got to, Manuel.
Yes, sir, Manuel. That's only fair and just.
I stick his face in that gully.
You got to do it.
Please do, Manuel. We don't want no Jonas happenings aboard.
Manuel stands up from the table.
You going to do it now?
I go stand my watch.
I mean it, Manuel.
All right. I think I paid doubles for my mistake, huh? Me what likes kids like tub of rat poison, and that kid two tubs. He just say one word to me, I throw him right back to the fish.
Manuel grabs a hurdy-gurdy from his bunk and heads up to the deck. Harvey watches him approach another fisherman.
Ah, the supper she is great tonight, Ollie. Doc has fish cakes like the star.
I sure could still wear about a dory load.
Manuel approaches Harvey.
I never taste such fish cake. And these raisin bread, oh, just like cake.
Say, look, you could get me some food, couldn't you?
Manuel makes a scrubbing motion with his hand.
But I'm sick and I'm hungry.
Go away from me.
Do you want to make some money?
Go away from me, I'll break your neck.
Why do you want to be a kidnapper?
Look, do me a favor, huh? Shut your face.
You're just as bad as the rest of
you. You crazy. Nobody bad around here. You just bad luck. Listen, you. You clean up Gurry a little bit, I give you a nickel, huh?
Say, look, I'm trying to give you $10,000, maybe. You get out one of those boats and take me back to New York.
Oh. You and me and that dory, huh?
Yes. How far are we from New York?
Oh. You want rolling over York now, huh?
Well, I know how. Been taught in school.
Now, look, you clean up a little bit, huh? Anything, just so little work. You want a nice boat, look nice, huh?
It's a dirty, rotten little boat I wouldn't even spit at.
Say, you...
Say, this finest schooner out from Gloucester.
Manuel scowls at Harvey, then angrily dips a bucket into the water. The fisherman bends down and looks into Harvey's eyes.
John, you, for the last time, you're going to work or no?
I'm not going to have anything more to do with you.
That is good here.
Manuel tosses the water from the bucket onto the deck and picks up a stiff, bristled broom. As he turns his back to the boy and scrubs the deck, Harvey walks away. Manuel stops scrubbing.
Hey, Jonah. Hey, Keith.
Manuel looks around.
Where are you hiding?
He spots Harvey trying to pull out one of the dories.
Hey! What are you doing?
I'm going to New York.
You what?
I'm going to get away from here.
Why?
Manuel takes the rope
you
from him.
Get away from me!
Hey, you, put down that oar.
I won't.
Put down...
Harvey whacks him with it.
Oh, you bad luck, all right.
Manuel grabs the oar from Harvey, and the boy picks up a large stick. They struggle, and Manuel takes the stick from him. Manuel grabs hold of the back of Harvey's collar and waistband. The boy tries to squirm free.
I can't do this as long as you can.
Harvey slowly gives up the struggle and starts to cry.
Oh, you cry, baby, too, huh?
I am not...
No? Good. Now look, you still want to row in over York?
Yes.
You still hungry?
Yes.
Then come here.
Still holding onto Harvey's collar, Manuel walks him across the deck. He takes Harvey's wrists and uses the boy's hands like tongs to pick up a fish head. Manuel takes Harvey to the side and lets the head fall into the water. He then directs the boy to the stairs.
Now you can go below and eat.
Harvey heads down to the crew's quarters.
That man said I could eat.
Manuel, it's okay. He do some work.
I did not.
You cleaned something off deck, no?
You made me do something.
That was work.
That's fine. Sit right here.
How'd you get him to do it? Ah, he'd do anything for me.
Manuel winces and rubs his shin.
He even break my leg, maybe, too.
Downstairs, Harvey eats hungrily. Now the schooner sits on the water with its sails down.
Yay ho, little fish, don't cry, don't cry. Yay ho, little fish, don't cry, don't cry.
Now Harvey strolls out on deck.
One stop, bake some biscuit and throw them away. Next day, no more fish come around boat to play. Yay.
Harvey spots Manuel lounging by the helm. As he sings, he turns a crank on his hurdy-gurdy. Harvey watches him with a furrowed brow. As he takes a bite of bread, he approaches Manuel.
Said cabbage to fish cake who lay on one dish. I beautiful cabbage, you only poor fish. Yay ho, little fish, don't cry, don't cry. Yay ho, little fish, don't cry, don't cry. Who's that?
Me.
Manuel keeps his back to Harvey.
The food was awful. It was better than nothing, I guess. If you hadn't choked me, I wouldn't have had to kick you.
You kick me? I feel nothing.
All cleared up, hasn't it? The weather, it's nice now.
It was till you come up.
Well, they sent me up.
No, I bet they asked you to stay.
They said you wanted to show me how to go on watch.
Nice fellas. Well, all right, go ahead, watch.
How?
Just keep quiet. Go someplace. Go look for iceberg or boat or something.
Is that all there is to watching? That seems like a lot of hooey.
Hooey? What kind of smart talk that hooey? You better tell Sailor's Angel that smart talk. He like to hear that, I think.
Who's he?
I guess you don't know nothing, huh? Sailor's Angel, he fly around up there all time. You watch here, look out for 25 men below. He watch up there, he look out for you. You go sleep, maybe. He tap you on shoulder with his wing and he say, hey, Manuel, wake up. What's the matter? I ashamed for you. He very nice fella. Everybody know that.
Oh.
Harvey looks out over the right side of the boat.
Well, nothing on the port side.
That fine. Anything on starboard?
Harvey steps over to the left side.
No, nothing on the starboard either.
And nothing in the head. That port, that starboard.
He He points to the opposite sides.
Well, then
I know a lot of things you don't know. I know that's not French you're singing.
That's right. About 10 million people know it Portuguese.
I bet you can't speak French.
Right now, I'm sorry I speak English. La 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 la.
Manuel spots something.
What's this?
Another schooner sits in the distance.
That's a boat. That's easy to see.
Yes. Maybe your father come back, see if you couldn't drown, huh?
Yeah, that boat's no bigger than this one.
Ai, ma gem da minha amada.
What do you keep singing for?
Because I like to sing. A vida que leva pisca.
I never heard that song before.
Me neither. I just make him up. Ai, ma gem da minha amada.
You can't write songs.
I don't write them. I just find them in my mouth.
A song can't be any good like that when you just make it up.
Say, that's best kind songs. When you feel good inside, like trade wind, she just come out. Oh, my beautiful lady.
Now people learn songs. Songs aren't just inside of people like that.
Say, sometimes a song's so big and sweet inside, I just can't get him out. And then I look up at stars and maybe cry. I feel so good. Don't you never feel like this?
Manuel looks into his eyes, then turns away.
No, I guess you don't.
Nobody else ever did either.
Say, my father, when he alive, he make better songs than me.
And what kind of songs did he sing?
Songs about the sun and the sea. Songs about the clouds. Big songs about the wind and the storms. And little songs, too, about the tip of my mother's nose. Oh, my father, he feel beautiful inside.
Is that all he did was sing?
Is that... My father was the best fisherman in the whole Madeira Islands. That's every place.
Well, that's not so much.
How you mean, not so much?
Well, I mean, he didn't do much for you. I mean, he didn't leave you anything.
He didn't leave... He leave me this hurdy-gurdy that his grandfather leave him. He teach me how to fish, how to sail a boat. He give me arms and hands and feet feeling good outside, and he teach me how to feel good inside. My father do all this. He have 17 other kids beside. What else a father do?
Oh, I don't know.
Say, listen, my father...
The schooner sails toward them.
Captain Disco!
Manuel rushes to the stairs.
Captain Disco! That Jenny Cushman, she is even now under our stern. She come make you happy, I think.
Jenny Cushman? I might have known it.
The captain and crew come up on deck.
Yes, sir. That's a nosy, long topmast prying into a wink.
Hey there! On the Cushman! Where's that poor excuse for a skipper you got aboard?
And who is it might be wanting him?
You're no concerned well who wants him, you bilge-raised haddock.
Well, if it ain't Disco Truth, and me thinking I was going to fish here all alone. Who passed you the word I was here so you could follow me, Disco?
Now, look here, Walt Cushman. I'm sick near to wretching that you using my brains to catch a trip of fish. Sailing into my wake every time I find a good spot.
Why, Captain Truth, now is that the way for one gentleman to talk to his colleague in commerce?
You're trailing me because I can find cod where you can't find half a pound of sick squid.
I'll do the fishing, Disco. You just get out that checkerboard and try to figure out how really smart you are.
Ah, so Walt, he beat you at checkers last winter, huh?
Yeah, and he cheats at that, too.
He beat us into Gloucester this trip, too, I think.
Oh, you think so, do you? Well, now listen to me. I'm going to tell you something. I ain't so dumb. Fussing around like that'll make him think the fishing is good here. Then in the morning, when the fog banks roll in, we'll sneak out and leave him setting here, baiting big and catching small while we're out finding fish. We'll have a full hold and be tied up in Gloucester by the 1st of August, and he'll still be out here floundering around trying to catch fish. Or I'll look more like a halibut than he does.
The crew heads off.
See, they sure are mad at each other, aren't they?
No, they're not mad. They just make it up. They do that all the time.
Gosh, everybody's crazy here. You make up your songs, they make up their man.
You got bunk. You better go below.
No, I'd rather stay here.
You go below.
No, I'm going to stay here and watch.
I watch here. You go there, watch. Go sleep. Do something. I don't understand you.
Manuel frowns and pushes Harvey away. With his eyes still focused toward the boy, Manuel sits down with his hurdy-gurdy. Harvey stops at the top of the stairs.
There's a place in my heart for the one I love best. And I still keep her picture tattooed on my chest. Yay-ho, little fish, don't cry. Yay-ho, little fish, don't cry, don't cry.
Harvey sits and watches Manuel. Daytime. Shrouded in patchy fog, the We're Here cuts through the ocean with the wind filling its sails. On board, Uncle Salters, Disco, and Manuel stand by the helm.
Well, they stole a march on Walt Cushman, all right, I reckon that time.
If we get that certain, sure.
We did, you darned old farmer. Come on, hold her to her course, northeast by east.
She heels over so much.
Well, leave her heel. You ain't steering no mowing machine now. Heave that lead, Manuel.
He think he got whole stern end of cow, maybe, huh?
Manuel walks off. Beside the stairs, Harvey sleeps wrapped in a tarp. Manuel shakes him.
Hey, Keith. Hey, wake up. Come on, wake up, little piece.
Long Jack heads up on deck.
Hey, wake up, wake up. Somebody think you dead, they have celebrations.
So that's your Tomorac poison. You tucked him in his little bunk last night,
What do you mean? This foolish kid, he bothered me. I don't know. He falls asleep, full tarpaulin over him, I guess. And me, I look all over for these.
Manuel grabs a thick coil of rope.
I suppose he pulled your coat around him, too.
I look for my coat, too.
He takes his coat from Harvey.
You stole my coat, too, huh?
Well, I know.
Sure, he stole it right off your back.
So a big, tough fisherman's gonna throw him back to the fishes, eh?
As Long Jack walks off, Manuel scowls.
Someday I think,
Manuel walks over to the side of the boat and drops the coil of rope into the water. Harvey watches as Manuel gives the weighted line some slack. The boy's gaze shifts thoughtfully, and he approaches Manuel. As the fisherman pulls the rope up from the water, he turns toward the others.
10 fathom!
Thanks for covering me up with your coat and everything.
Oh, that's all right.
Would you by any chance be showing any blue pebbles from the bottom?
I never did thank you for saving my life. I ought to thank you for that, all right.
You feel better this morning, huh?
I guess so.
Well, when you got it figured out, you come and let somebody know, huh?
Manuel pulls up the weight and studies its bottom.
Blue pebble she is! By golly, I think that Disco know these ocean better as I know inside my shirt.
He drops the weighted plumb line.
Fishing now?
Sure. I fish for bottom, so she don't fish for us.
A sailor passes.
Go away with your foolish questions, which don't have no brain.
All right, then, if that's the way you feel about it.
Harvey turns to go and stumbles in a tangle of Manuel's line wrapped around his leg. He shakes it loose and leaves. Manuel grins.
15 fathom and clear away!
He peers at the sea.
By golly, I beat you this time.
Now on deck, Dan kneels on a makeshift chopping block and dumps a bucket of small fish on it. He spreads the fish out in front of the men, singing with them as they quickly slice the fish into small chunks with long, slim butcher knives.
Merry bingo, bingo, oh, a terrible man, oh, a terrible man. He will bring your beads and corals, yes, I know about his morals.
Harvey approaches and watches the workers from behind Manuel.
Bingo, bingo came to woo her, brought a lot of presents to her.
Harvey watches Manuel rapidly chop up fish after fish.
Oh, what a terrible man.
Manuel stares at Harvey, then chops another fish.
Get coming of all the conscience!
What's the matter, farmer? Think you're slicking the hogs?
Salters sucks his cut finger.
Bouncing around under me, your bald.
What you laughing at?
Him.
Well, don't laugh.
Everybody else did.
All right, they got right to laugh. They know how to chop bait. You know how?
It doesn't look like anything.
Go ahead, chop. Tail first.
Manuel hands his knife to Harvey. The knife sticks in the fish.
Try it again. Harder.
Manuel takes back the knife.
You fish for sperm whale, maybe. Don't laugh. Besides, you laugh no good. Like seagull.
Harvey glances about and blinks.
I guess I want to do something.
Yes, but you want to do just what you want to do. I tell you what you do. You go below in galley and help Doc. You carry slops. You sweat in galley like Dan did before you talk about being fisherman. Go on now, go on.
All right.
Harvey leaves and Manuel turns to Long Jack.
You think Manuel's soft with that kid, huh? You think because I catch him, I let him still be Jonah, huh? Not on your living.
Disco sits watching.
Did he drive me crazy? think I break his neck.
Later, coils of line and piles of fresh-cut bait rest along the deck. The fishermen make trawls by fastening a chunk of bait to each of the many hooks on the lines. A deckhand passes, lugging a 20-gallon bucket of slop. Straining with another bucket, Harvey climbs the steps from Doc's galley. He struggles to slide the container onto the deck, then grips the wire handle with both fists. He lifts it against his tattered apron and sets it up on the deck's rail. Manuel looks up from his work and sees it.
Kid!
Harvey looks at him.
Spit!
What?
Spit first!
Why?
You'll find out.
Harvey spits, then recoils.
Oh, thanks.
He wipes his face.
You're welcome.
Jack and another fisherman puff on pipes and snicker as Harvey staggers with the bucket to the rail on the opposite side of the ship. He grabs the bucket's rim and bottom and dumps its contents overboard. Behind him, Dan sets a wooden keg on end and removes its rim with a pointed awl.
You go out fishing?
Sure, sometimes me and Uncle Salters.
Who goes with Manuel?
Nobody. You don't see him baiting a trawl, do you?
You mean he doesn't fish?
Sure he does. He fishes handline. He ain't used a trawl or had a dory mate since his pop died.
Oh. Did you start fishing with your father?
Sure. That's natural, ain't it?
Dan stabs the awl into the keg and carries it away. Harvey stares in Dan's direction, then grabs his bucket and gets back to work. Now the We're Here sails calmly, silhouetted in the sinking sun. Daytime. The schooner cuts through choppy waters. Now on deck, Disco oversees his men carry buckets of bait to their dories.
Get your dories ready! Come on, boys, step lively!
The fishermen unhook the rigging and attach the ropes to a dory. They hoist the two-person rowboats over the side and toss their buckets in.
Keep well to the western, Tom. We'll head straight down the road as soon as we've got all the dories filled.
As two fishermen climb into a dory, men on deck roughly lower to the pounding waves.
Come on, get her in the water.
Other men tumble about as another dory is launched. As the next craft is lowered over the side, it swings wildly. One man falls forward against his stern as he leaps in and fumbles to release the hooks.
Thank you, Uncle Salt. Manuel, he ought
to. As his dory hangs ready to be lowered, Manuel carefully loads his gear into it. Seeing him, Harvey sets down his bucket and walks up to the boat.
Isn't it too rough to go out in that little boat?
What do you mean?
I mean to go out alone.
Why not go alone? 5 minutes, I have 100 fish, keep me covered.
I mean, wouldn't it be better if you had someone to row, maybe?
Who I get to row, Doc? Disco? You're very foolish this morning.
Well, I rowed a boat at school. I could row it.
Oh, I see. You row these boats, huh? What do you know about boats when you cannot even chop bait?
I know lots about boats, see? I know that's the jib, and that's the jumbo, and that's the fore rigging, and that's the fore topmast, and that's the foremast, and that's the triadic stay, and that's the main topmast, and that's the main mast, and that's the main rigging, and that's the dory kit, and that's the drunken spit, and anything else you want to know.
Where you learn all these?
I read a book on it in Captain Disco's cabin. I don't care who knows it. You can go row your old boat all by yourself. I wouldn't go out in it for anything.
Manuel grins proudly. As Harvey dumps slop, Disco surveys the crew.
By golly, that's smart, Chief.
About time to break his neck, ain't it?
Huh? Oh, I got no time to break necks. I got fishing to do.
Lower away!
Manuel feeds out the rope as his shipmates lower his dory. Now our view scans a map of the coast of Nova Scotia, moving past Sable Island and St. Pierre Bank. As our view moves north, it stops near the coast of Newfoundland at Greenbanks. Now the We're Here emerges from dense fog.
Hard lee! Stand by the head sail! 28 fathoms. He's shoulder fast, Captain Disco.
We're getting to her.
26 fathoms. Bottom rock.
We're on the bank. Let go your anchor.
Men man the anchor line at the winch.
Tie up your jib and jumbo. Stand by your foresail. Bait them snug, boys. Bait them for home and mother. This fog's going to lift for you.
Well, that's something.
What do you care, Jack? Pop could find fish in a graveyard.
There's a run of cod on this bank that Walt Cushman won't know nothing about.
Ahoy there on the mudscow. Who
whose anchor chain is that a rattling like it's full of rust and roaches?
Another ship breaks the fog.
Well, if it ain't Disco too. Did you spring your four-stick trying to follow me, Disco?
Disco glares at Walt's ship.
I suppose you'll deny I showed you the road to this spot a year ago this very day. You cross-eyed mackerel.
Want to roll over for a game of checkers? Fishing is mighty sparse here. We'll never sink under the weight of fish we've been catching.
Well, I ain't doing so good myself. I can lay it to your presence, maybe.
He's lying, same as me. He's a plank deeper in the water than he was the last time we seen him.
I think that Walt Cushman, he's smart fisherman. Maybe we better sail after him all time, huh?
Later in the crew's quarters.
Well, boys, you gotta start infilling fish from now on. That meddling buoy tender's near as full up as we are.
We'd be way up around Virgin Rocks by now if it weren't for picking up Jonah's.
He's been working mighty hard, Mr. Jack. And I don't think there's much Jonah left in him, honest.
Well, we might fill faster if our Jonah catcher throw away his hand line and bend on a trawl for once.
You don't think I catch as much fish as you, huh, Jack?
I ain't saying that.
Maybe you just bump your head on bunk when you get up this morning, huh?
Or maybe you Portuguese just don't know nothing about trawl fishing.
I tell you what I do.
Manuel points at Harvey.
I take Jonah Kidd with me tomorrow. I fish hand line, I show him same time. I bet you we bring in more fish as you and Nate togethers.
Together. Speak English, will you? More fish as me and Nate together.
More fish than you and Nate together.
Reckon we take that, Nate?
You mean I'm going to be your diary mate?
I mean nothing of kind. You just sit in boat and be Jonah. I do fishing.
I'm going out with Manuel in the morning.
That's fine.
Did you say you'd like to bet a little something on that, Manuel?
Oh, you think you scare me on bet, huh? I tell you what I do with you. I bet you my brand new safety razor I buy last Christmas, 98 cents mail order house. You put up 50 cents piece, brand new this year's.
That's a wager.
You sure you didn't bump your head, Manuel?
I no bet on sure thing. I bet on myself. Just as good.
Harvey carries a bucket up to the deck. He sets it down beside the main mast and examines some riggings. Now Harvey sits in a dory, wearing a fisherman's rain hat as Manuel rows them away from the schooner.
I guess I didn't mean what I said about going in your boat.
Makes no difference what you mean. You're in it now.
I'm awful glad I am, Manuel. I don't think I'll be a Jonah, honest.
What's your name, Harvey?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got to call you something. I'll call you Harvey.
The boy smiles warmly.
Oh, that's better. You don't laugh like Seagull now. Come on now, I feel tired. You've got to help row.
Really? Gee.
Put in the pins.
Harvey sits facing him.
Put the oars in the pins. We gotta go someplace.
Now, when I say three, you row.
All right. I'm ready.
One, two, three.
Harvey pulls the oars and falls on his back.
That fine school you go to, you row on your back, huh?
I was too anxious, I guess.
Ah, never mind anxious. You leave me be anxious. Now, come on. One, two, three, row!
Harvey pulls the oars more slowly. He clenches his jaw as his oars cut through the water. Manuel grins.
We can get someplace.
He rows along with Harvey.
Bottom of the ocean, I think, maybe.
Later, as their dory bobs in the water, Manuel crosses behind Harvey.
Now we fish.
Manuel picks up a trawl line and hooks a palm-sized fish carcass. He looks down at Harvey.
Well, go on, bait your hook. How do you think you're going to fish, sitting there looking at me?
As Harvey hooks another small fish, Manuel drops his trawl in the water, then looks at the boy's work.
Ah, you bait just like you row a boat. Here. Look, you must put barb all the way through. Like this. Otherwise, that fish, he spit that out 6-7 times when he feels something. You know, this fish, he don't go to school. He don't know French, but he pretty smart, too. Now, drop him down to bottom. Then pull up, about 6 inches, maybe, so he put the fish straight in eye and say, look here, I got corned beef and cabbage.
Harvey drops his trawl into the water and watches it unravel from a spool.
Yeah, I've got one.
As Harvey hastily retrieves his trawl from the water, Manuel sits and watches him with a smirk. Harvey finds the hook empty.
You got a new idea maybe too, huh?
What do you think? We just feed fish free here for nothing?
I guess I was too anxious again.
I told you, stay away from that anxious business. Let the fish be anxious. Here. Look.
He grabs his own trawl.
One, two. Now it's in his mouth. Now, up he comes.
He pulls up a codfish.
Gosh, can I take him off the hook?
Manuel tosses the fish into their dory.
We got no time for that. We don't know these fish personal.
Hey, I've got one now.
All right, pull him up, pull him up. Don't let him stay down there and tell all of the fish what's going on. Pull him up.
He grabs the back of Harvey's shirt.
Here. You're going to bring fish up see you, you go and down see him. Pull him up.
I will.
Harvey falls back onto his seat.
Oh, the boat tipped and I...
He pulls the rest of the trawl from the water. The hook is empty again.
Oh, he got up.
How you expect catch fish falling on your backside all time? Bait your hook.
Long Jack's dory passes.
Don't look like there was jumping in your dory.
I wait till I get soft place for him to land in first.
I'll catch the next one. You'll beat Long Jack and Nate, don't you worry. He won't get your razor.
You think so, huh?
He looks out at the sea.
Nothing going on here now. That fish, he have meeting down below. He tell all other fish there's something not so funny going on.
Has your father been dead a long time?
6 years next month. Seem a long, long time.
How did he die?
He drowned off Cape Sable in storm. Wave come at night and wash him overboard.
Didn't they find him?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What you sorry about?
Well, I mean your father. They didn't find him.
What they need find him for? He all right?
Well, but drowning out in the ocean all alone at night and...
Well, what's trouble about that? That fine way. The Savior, he take my father up to Fisherman's Heaven, up with all his old friends.
Manuel stands up and pulls in his trawl.
Quick, he take him up, quick. Just like I pull up this 35-pound fish.
He tosses another cod into the dory. Manuel frees the trawl's hook and turns to Harvey.
Savior, he see my father all tired and wet down there in the water. So he light the harbor buoy and he say, come on up, old Manuel. I so happy you come up here to help us fish. And my father, he say, thank you. I'm very happy to come up, too. And maybe I show you something about fishing up here, huh? And then they all laugh. And the Savior, he put his arm around my father, and he give him brand new dory to fish in.
You think they really fish in heaven?
Well, sure they fish in heaven. What else they do? The apostles, they all fishermen, ain't they? You remember that Simon called Peter? You remember that time when he don't catch no fish in the Sea of Galilee? And the Savior, he stand on the shore and he say, Simon, you throw your net on the right side. And Simon, he throw his net on the right side and he catch so many fish, his net is almost breaking too. Oh, I think the Savior, he the best fisherman. But my father, he come next. And not fishing like this. Oh, no, no. Fish bite all time. When no more fish, the Savior, he make more fish. He make more fish, he make more bread, he make more wine. And at night, he stand watch all by himself.
Manuel baits his hook.
He say, good night, fisherman. You tired now. Go to your bunks. And no snorings, please.
He tosses out the trawl.
Good night, Manuel's father. Oh, that very nice place.
Oh.
Sometimes I think I go there right now. And I say now, whoa, Manuel. You gotta be better fisherman first. That Savior, he only give dories to first-class fishermen like your father. So I keep on fishing. I no hurry. I know my father keep place for me and his dory.
Manuel looks down at Harvey's trawl.
Hey, sleepy face, look! You log on the bunk.
Oh, say, I didn't.
Easy now. Easy, he's a big one. And stay off your backside, you hear me? Come on, pull him up.
Trying to.
Oh, you want Manuel help, huh? I think you get blisters. Blister's good for fishermen. Come on, pull him up, pull him up. Hey, what's this?
Yeah.
Hey, pull him up, pull him up.
What is he?
He's an halibut. Big, like mainsail, huh?
Harvey pulls up a long, spade-shaped fish and topples back with it.
Oh!
Oh, the boat tipped again.
Manuel helps him toss the fish aside.
Gosh, I told you I'd get one, didn't I?
By golly, my little fish catch fish bigger than he is. I feel my whiskers disappearing.
I told you we'd beat Long Jack and Nate, didn't I?
Sure, we beat everybody. Manuel and his little fish, they beat everybody.
We make fishermen out of you, huh, little fish?
Nearby, Long Jack falls overboard from his dory.
What? We can all ever squid down, miss.
Easy, Jack. Them hooks. Too late.
Hey, Long Jack. What's the matter?
We're putting out our second tub, and Jack was snagged overside.
He might as well have fastened to an octopus.
Get a knife. Come on.
A mustached fisherman cuts Jack free from a tangled line aboard his dory.
Ah, Nate, I think you need new dory mate, maybe. One what's good, fisherman. Maybe next time you get one what ain't old lady, what gets all mixed up with knitting needles, huh? That Log Jaggy is mad.
I knew he would be. That'll stop him fishing for a while, I guess.
You mean you knew?
When I heard you betting last night with Long Jack, I sneaked up on deck and tangled up his trawl.
What'd you do?
Sure, I put some knots in it and took a log of bait off the hooks.
Manuel glowers at Harvey, then pushes past him and picks up the flopping halibut.
What are you going to do?
Manuel holds the fish on his knee over the bow.
You still alive and strong, huh? That good. You go back, you tell other fish, Manuel, he got no fisherman in this boat. He got no dory mate. He just got cheat. And I no catch big, strong, honest fish like you that way.
He drops the halibut into the sea.
Tell him good and loud.
Oh, but Manuel, I just wanted you to win, that's all.
Manuel pulls up the anchor and drops it in the dory. Later, he and Harvey paddle back to the We're Here.
Well, what have we got here?
What's the matter? I don't remember heisting no signal to come aboard.
We lose something. Something we never have, I think. This kid, he don't like our way of fishing. He won't come back.
Manuel, won't you listen?
You give him hand, maybe. He got no way to cheat himself overside.
Come on, come here.
Disco grabs Harvey's hand and helps him onto the deck. The scruffy-haired boy watches sadly as Manuel rows off in his dory. Disco pulls his pipe from his mouth.
Don't like fishing, son?
What happens? What do you do when people don't speak to you around here?
No, you have to settle that yourself, son. I'm skipper to a crew, but I ain't dry nursing them. I don't take no part in squabbles. They settle that between themselves just like everything else. Whatever's foul between you and Manuel, you'll have to free and clear yourself.
As Disco walks off, Harvey sits on the bow. With a furrowed brow, he glances back at the sea. Now, Manuel climbs down the ladder into the crew's quarters.
Hey, Doc. Hey, Otanio, otra para ti. Arrespeta, dumalora. Aladis. Hey, Manuel. Tu dash mo un bagino, eh?
Manuel crosses behind Harvey and removes a tiny case from his bunk.
Aladis, tu namo fascis issue? Now.
The case contains a safety razor with comb-like teeth. As Manuel climbs up the deck, Doc turns to Harvey.
Yes, that sure do beat all.
What was he saying about me?
Don't say nothing about you. You just got a new funny story, that's all.
Doc carries a pot to the galley. Harvey starts to peel a potato with a knife, then hesitates. He puts down the potato and knife and climbs out of the cabin. Up on deck, he watches Disco wipe down Long Jack's arm with some cotton.
You should have come aboard this morning, Jack. These things are worked in pretty deep now.
Lose a day's fishing?
No, sir. That's what somebody expected me to do. No yellow liver job's gonna keep me from doing my share or winning a bet either.
I can pull this one through, Jack, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut the others.
All right.
Manuel brings Jack the razor.
Here's the bet, Jack. I pay prompt, huh?
I'll take it because I want it fair and square. That's a sight more than you tried to be.
Ah, you crazy, Jack. You don't think I fouled your trawl?
That trawl fouled itself, maybe. I've been a hand on trawl for 20 years, Porter Goosey, and I never seen line snarl itself that way except by human hand.
Well, maybe you're too anxious to win bet, Jack, huh? Maybe you no keep your mind on things.
Listen, Porter Goosey. Either you or that kid done it, it stands to reason. If I found he put his Jonah flippers into my trawl, I'll wind him twice around the capstan and break him off short.
I think you put hooks in yourself so you got a chance to drink more rum, huh?
You call me cheap?
Jack.
Jack grabs a knife. Manuel fends him off.
Jack, you talk too loud. You drink too much rum, huh?
I'll discover right now who done it. By thunder, I'll cut hooks all over where there ain't none.
Jack, you hurt your arm.
Don't, Long Jack, don't. It wasn't Manuel. I did it. I did it last night while you were having supper. But I didn't mean you should get the hooks in your arm this way. Honest, I didn't. I just thought we'd have a little fun and win the... I'm so
well,
sorry.
You sneak along, Jack. What you do?
You keep out of this part of Lucy.
Oh, Long Jack. Well, what do you worry about? He admit the whole thing like regular grown fella. He say he's sorry. Everything all right.
Nothing's
now.
All right till I beat his ears off. Get out of my own...
Manuel grabs him.
You touch that kid, I tear you apart, see?
Yeah.
Me, Manuel talking, I tear you apart, see? So don't get me mad, Long Jack. I get all crazy and sick inside.
Manuel glowers at Long Jack with wide eyes. The lanky fisherman steps back and turns to Disco.
All right, start cutting, Disco.
The captain works on his arm with a knife.
Maybe he cut picture of your girl out there, huh, Jack?
I'm telling you, Manuel, keep that kid away from me. He's a Jonah, and you'll find this is only the beginning.
Wind ruffles Harvey's dark hair as he watches Disco cut the hooks from Long Jack's arm. Later, in the crew's cabin, Harvey ambles along the dining table with his head hung low. He picks up an apple and takes a seat. Manuel enters. When Harvey sees him, he takes a bite from the apple, then turns and heads to his bunk. As he climbs up, Manuel grabs him by the seat of his pants and pulls him back down. He turns the boy to face him.
What's the matter, little fish? You sleepy?
I'm so ashamed, Manuel.
Sure. We all got to be ashamed once, so we don't do things again what we got to be ashamed of, see?
Yes, but you not speaking to me, and those hooks in Jack's arm.
Manuel pats Harvey's face.
Ah, oh, Jack, he very tough man.
All fishermen have hooks. Oh, sure. 2, 3, 4 hooks. My father, he have hook in his arm right here. And 3 years later, he think he have pimple on back of his neck. You know what was it? Hook coming out. And my father, he say, oh, so that's what's been in Denmark all these time, huh?
He takes a bite from Harvey's apple.
That's fine.
He plays his hurdy-gurdy.
There's a school of fish way down deep in the sea where the little fish study geography. My father, he teach me this song. And I put your kind of words to it. There they write on a slate and they read from a book. Learn to run with the bait and just leave them the hook. I gotta sing every time I get mad. You drive those flying fish out of my stomach, you know?
Harvey nods, his eyes brimming with tears.
Fish, don't cry, don't cry. You'll be a balea by and by. Balea, that means big fish, like whale, you know? With fins and a tail to help you sail, and maybe some wings to help you fly. Yay-ho, little fish, don't cry, don't cry. Yay-ho, little fish, don't cry, don't cry.
Later, clouds fill the sky over the two-masted schooner. Now an image of a compass appears over the ship's stern as it plows through choppy water. Now a sailor cuts fish into bait. Waves crash over some rigging and a piece of bait is hooked onto a trawl. On a map of the Atlantic Ocean, our view moves close to the Grand Banks as dozens of dories set out from their respective schooners. As the masted ships bob gently on the sea, a distant fisherman waves from his dory. On the We're Here.
There's a blue keel. She's from Gloucester, same as us.
He points to a schooner.
And there's the Elizabeth K. Brown. She sailed good when the skipper is sober. There's a Flying Swan. She dragged her anchor all the time.
Everybody comes here and fishes last because it's the biggest and best bank, huh?
Sure. Only some come too soon, some come too late. Disco, he come right with cotton. See?
Manuel smiles at Harvey.
Look. There, Virgin Rock, I tell you about. Now, watch, she gonna roar.
Waves crash over a jutting rock.
Say, that's the bottom of the ocean.
Sure, she get lonesome sometimes. She come up for a little look around. Yes, by thunder, there she is. I think that Jenny Cushman, she filled with fish already. She beat us home, huh, Disco? I got here too early. The real run ain't started yet. By this time tomorrow, we'll be fishing 72-hour stretches, hand line. The cod will be covering this bank like heaven. Walt Cushman beats me into Gloucester, I'll hang myself with an eel. Hey, at the wheel there! Down wheel!
The We're Here pitches forward as it sails across the choppy sea. Now on deck, Manuel and Harvey pull down on a rope together. Manuel shields Harvey's head as a dory swings past him on ropes. Later, the duo tosses a bucket and a barrel into a dory, then climb inside. Later still, Harvey rows them out as Manuel feeds a trawl into the water. Now schooners and dory boats fill the sea. Several different fishermen toss large cod into their dories. On the We're Here, Dan and Doc pull the flopping fish over the bow and drop them onto the deck. Nearby, Disco and Uncle Salters do the same. The fish are then tossed into a storage pile. As Long Jack lifts up a large catch, the trawl snaps and the fish drops back into the sea.
Look at that fish, Bobby!
The fishermen pitch their catch into one boat, forking each fish with a trident. As Harvey struggles with a large fish on the end of his trident, Manuel spears it and helps him lift it into the boat. Nighttime. In the galley, the crew eats hungrily. Smiling, Manuel nudges Harvey. Now, in twilight, the dories drift on the water, each lit up with a torch. On their dory, Manuel and Harvey reel in large fish. Long Jack adds more wriggling fish to his catch. The boats fill up, and Disco looks skyward and puffs his pipe. As Harvey and Manuel cut fish, they grin at each other. As the fishermen pitch more fish on board, Harvey falls asleep, leaning on his trident. Manuel briskly rubs the boy's hair and Harvey snaps awake, then returns to work. Daytime. As the dories return to the ship, Disco peers over a large pile of fish and grins. Later, he strides along the busy deck.
Bring them in, Danny boy! Bring them in! In case some of them ain't expecting this! We're full up and ready for home!
As Disco raises the flag, all the fishermen look up.
Hi, little fish, that's for us. Disco say we all full up and we go home. Come on.
As they row back to the schooner, Disco leans over the rail.
Then pitch up them last fish, Manuel. Then you and Harvey's going to take me a visit. Hey, Daniel.
Yes, sir.
As soon as enough hands come aboard, tell them to turn to and heave up that anchor short.
Yes, sir.
Disco climbs in with Manuel and Harvey, who row alongside the Flying Swan.
The Flying Swan, they wanted to send in the mail to Gloucester. We got sickness aboard. We're heading for home.
Go on, Disco Troop. You and your sickness, you're just crowing, that's all.
No! We all catch too many fish too soon. We all sick about it.
Well, some of the lads expected you, Disco. You can mail those, if you will.
It's a pleasure to be postman to you, Benjamin. Why don't you sign up with me next season and get home before the snow flies?
Now at another schooner.
I know what you're going to say, Disco. I don't want none of your sarcasm. We heard your bell and saw your flag. I hope you found it with all hands.
As the boat's captain hands Disco a bundle of letters, another sailor approaches.
If our new baby's born before I get back, talk Molly out of naming him Hubert, will you? She wants to call him Hubert.
Another baby, Martin? Well, you ought to stay at sea all the time. That's what he'd do if he stay on these boats.
They approach another boat.
Hey there! Aboard the Bluegill! Any mail for Gloucester?
Kind of late starting to crow, ain't you, Disco?
Well, I just thought I'd like to carry your mail, Peter.
We just come back from rowing our mail over to the Jenny Cushman.
Ah, that's a poor attempt at a joke, Peter.
Yeah? Does that look like a joke?
Disco turns and gapes at the dories returning to the Jenny Cushman.
Why, the sneaking sand shark. Never ring a bell to nothing. Never give us no sign he was going to swing off today. Get back to the vessel. Give me them oars. Well, go on then.
Come on.
Push your back into it.
Hey, aboard the vessel. Get that anchor.
Hey, what's eating Disco? Is it lizard?
Iron that. It's the Cushman.
Crewman man the anchor crank.
Pull up your parcel.
A sailor loosens the rigging and a sail unfurls.
Hey, Disco, here comes the Cushman.
You don't think I took it for a water spout, do you? Hey, get that anchor!
With Disco on board, the crewmen weigh anchor, ready the sails, and take their stations.
Goodbye, Disco! What's the matter? Have you run aground?
On the Cushman.
You haven't any mail for Gloucester, have you, sir?
Disco cups his hands to his mouth.
If you save your wind to fill your sails...
Would you mind keeping us from passing here?
We're going to race with Jerry Cushman, huh?
Sure.
As Manuel takes the oars, Harvey dumps a bucket over the side of their dory, stumbles, and falls in. Manuel pulls him up.
Lord, it's fine kind racing business.
You got that backside anxious business, huh? You're going to roll or swim to Gloucester, maybe. It's fine time diving and swimming.
Harvey yanks a hook stuck to his coat sleeve, then winces in pain.
Ah, put your back into that windlass. You don't think that anchor's going to float up out of the water, do you?
Harvey cuts the line.
Swear up on them halyards, and you needn't be afeard of parting them.
Right down them dories.
We're going to bury your nose this trip.
Harvey shows Manuel the hook in his arm.
I can't work with this in me. Pull it through, will you?
Manuel grabs Harvey's wrist and reaches for some pliers.
Start hollering. Nobody hear you.
I haven't the time.
As he removes the hook, Manuel smiles and glances at the boy. Harvey grits his teeth, then relaxes. Manuel pulls away the hook and holds the boy's arm up between them.
Now, stick that in your face and suck blood out.
Anchor all clear. Get aboard and cat-headed. On the main hatch now.
Manuel grabs the line and helps hoist the mainsail as sailors scurry about the deck. With Disco at the ship's wheel, the sails billow and the schooner's bow cuts swiftly through the water. As Harvey coils a rope, Disco peers through binoculars at the Jenny Cushman.
She's got a good lead on us, Captain Disco.
Yeah, got his topsail set already, running like a scared sardine. I'll climb over his stern rail or sail the bottom out of us.
Manuel and Harvey grin as they work.
She's stepping now.
Disco elbows Harvey aside.
Just look at this lady go.
Both boats glide over the waves with their dories stacked on deck. Now the We're Here pitches steeply in the water. On deck, the fishermen grip the rail.
It's awful heavy going, Disco. If a big one ever hits her when she's heeled over like this,
don't you worry about this little lady. She can take care of herself.
As the port side of their boat tips toward the sea, the drenched sailors hang onto the slanting deck. In the choppy water, the schooner leans further on its side.
I told you so. Now what will I do?
Ease her off a bit. Give her a hand. She'll right herself.
The men at the wheel follow Disco's commands. The boat levels and sails onward through the choppy sea. Its billowed sails stretch taut, straining against their rigging. Now in calmer waters, the sun hangs low in the cloudy sky. On the Jenny Cushman, the ship's crew gathers around its captain at the wheel. One man mends his lines and gazes back toward the We're Here as another steadies the wheel.
Disco must have picked up an engine someplace.
Yeah? Well, wait till tonight. I'm short-cutting across Franklin Shoals. He won't dare follow me with his draft.
Later on the We're Here.
6 fathoms.
6 fathoms, yes, sir. He's taking a shortcut across this bank and thinking I'm going to get scared and swing her off. Well, I'll cut shorter.
Now on the Cushman.
5 fathoms.
They're feeling for the bottom, all right.
Disco peers over a lantern and charts on a table.
You can do it with that hull of his, Disco. But we draw more water in the Cushman, don't we?
I know what water we draw. You keep her to it.
3.5 fathoms. Disco, you ain't been looking down the neck of a jug again, have you?
Listen here, farmer. I can cross 16 feet of water and not find bottom tender. I ain't ripping out no keels, but I'm going to beat Walt Cushman into Gloucester, and that's all there is to it. So don't you swing her off.
Why, I know this bottom as well as my wife knows her own kitchen. You keep her to it now.
I'm with you, Captain Troop.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
Disco returns to studying the charts. Daytime. The We're Here pursues the Jenny Cushman as Disco peers ahead through binoculars.
I've been old Wolf's caught under his hatches.
Disco tossles Harvey's hair.
Shake your bustle, little woman.
Yes, sir.
A toothless sailor laughs. Disco turns and grins at him. Now in the galley, Harvey finds Manuel writing in a notebook.
Manuel!
Huh?
Gonna pass them soon?
Oh, sure. That Disco, he pass anything. He a half porpoise, I think, huh?
What are you doing?
I figure up how much I get my share fishing here.
I mean, if market price good, say 4.5, 5 cents a pound, what will he get?
Calculating, he licks the pencil.
Oh, by golly, I'm going to have lots of money.
And with my $3 a month, I'll have $9, won't I?
Sure, sure. We're very rich men now, huh? We have fun spending it when we go ashore, you and me, huh?
What'll you do ashore?
Well, first I got to go church store. You know where you buy a crucifix and Madonna and things. And I buy a little two-place gold candlestick I see there. And I take to church and I light candles for my father's birthday. Third this month, August.
Oh, that's very nice, Manuel.
Not so nice as my father should have, maybe, but it's nice in a small way. I think maybe I light candle for myself, too. I have a few bad thoughts this trip.
You never had any bad thoughts.
Oh, sure.
What were they?
I forget them now, but I have them, I think.
Then what'll you do?
Oh, then I get dressed up. Oh, I gonna get nifty suit. You know, purple colored, oh, very nifty suit with cloth top shoes to match, you know, and big pearl buttons. Oh, and then I get new tie with big yellow flowers. Oh. Then I walk up and down Duncan Street and I say, hey, girls. Hey, look. Manuel is in town.
Girls?
Oh, sure. Beautiful girls. Oh, I got maybe 5, 6 girls in Gloucester. I tell each one I like her best. You gotta tell big lies to girls to make them happy.
Oh, you don't go with the girls.
Oh, sure I go with girls. Say, every man go with girls.
He turns to see Harvey sadly drop his eyes.
Oh, I guess maybe you're right. I don't go with girls.
I kind of thought you were kidding.
Oh, sure. That girl business is all kidding, sure.
He takes his cap from his bunk.
I think maybe I gotta do some more kidding from now on, huh? Here we talk all the time about what I do. What do you do? You talk to your father on telephone, huh? You tell him you live and happy, huh?
My father?
Oh. You forgot about your father what owned that big boat you fall off, and he think maybe you swallowed up by a shark or something?
Oh, well, I don't know.
Oh. You don't know how happy he'd be, huh?
Oh, I guess he'll be glad, all right.
He leave his skin, I think. He hug you to pieces and take those pieces back home with him, huh?
But I don't want to go back home, Manuel.
You don't want to go home?
Well, I mean, I just...
What do you mean, little fish?
Well, I want to stay here with you in Gloucester and go out fishing again this way.
You want to be a fisherman?
I want to be a better fisherman than Tom Platt or Dan. I want to be as good as you are.
As good as me? Oh, that's very nice, little fish. But how about your father? He come too?
Oh, well, I could see him between trips if he wanted to see me.
What do you mean, if he want to see you, little fish?
Oh, well, he's got his business and everything. He'd be all right.
Manuel sadly studies Harvey's downcast gaze. As Harvey lifts his tear-filled eyes to Manuel, the fisherman smiles.
I want to be with you, Manuel.
Harvey's eyes well with tears as Manuel gazes warmly at the little boy.
Please.
Harvey stares at Manuel with pleading eyes. Manuel gently places his hand on Harvey's cheek and pats it.
My little fish.
They gaze at each other.
If you all want to see a boat, what's going to be fast? Come and see one.
Now the two ships lean and pitch through a rough sea. With Disco at his side, Manuel grips the hand pins of the ship's wheel. Harvey stares over his shoulder.
We'll lay her right alongside him.
The crew tends the rigging.
Hold it to it, Manuel. We'll lay her right alongside him.
The crew tends the rigging.
It'll be the best boat from here in.
They all grin.
I'll take a reef in his beard as we pass by.
As the taut sails pull on their lines, Long Jack taps Disco on the shoulder.
Them tops will carry away if we keep this up.
I'll take the lowest spars out of it before I'll let four bushmen work the wind into me. There she's driving now. Yes, sir! Walk along, little girlie!
As water sprays over them, sailors cling to the rail and stumble along the deck. Now, on the Cushman.
They're coming now, Walt. I guess they got us.
No, he ain't. There's more than one way to open the can. Stand by to come about!
Walt takes the wheel. On the We're Here, Manuel eyes the yaw of the Jenny Cushman.
What's this? Disco, he's coming about. Some money business, I think.
The Cushman's bow points toward them.
Why, the cam with a coward. Can't take an honest licking. Try and bluff me, will he? Stand by the main sheet. Steady, Manuel.
Now on the Cushman, Walt is at the wheel.
Now watch him jump and holler when he has to give way. I'm going to cut from across his bow.
Walt gives the wheel to another, then watches the two ships glide toward each other.
Give away to us, Disco.
Well, I ain't giving away neither.
You got the butt, man.
I'll butt like a barnacle. She'll cut us down short.
The glistening sails of both ships billow full.
Steady, Indigo.
Hold it, you and Manuel. Don't move me.
The ships pitch forward and tilt their tall masts, heading straight for each other. Doc flings a metal basin into the air. Walt gapes. The two ships narrowly miss each other, their wakes drenching both crews with brine. Walt stands with clenched fists.
I had you right away, you old beach goat!
Well, you must have mislaid it somewhere!
Still right on time, sir!
Well, we ain't to Gloucester yet. I'll do more and keep you in sight, Disco.
Captain Pushman is a sailor, but he should have been a tailor.
Oh, what a cowman!
Pushman might have been a grocer, but a first class seaman now.
Leaving the Jenny Cushman to turn back on course, the We're Here sails on, pouncing down on the white-capped waves, which in turn toss her bow high above them. The sea roughly washes against both ships. Now, as the Cushman's foresail dangles loose of its mast, Captain Troop delightedly watches through binoculars. Long Jack mans the wheel.
Poor Walt's on his ship and he's taking in his topsail.
You'd best do the same, Disco. That main top will go if you don't.
Well, since you're such a nervous galoot, we got old Walt into a vessel. I'll mind what you say.
Disco slaps Long Jack on the shoulder, and the We're Here again dips her bow into the sea. The rigging lines strain on the pin rails.
Pull off with Jack, man. You stand by strike topsail.
I go up. We get a little air, I think.
Ain't you gonna luff her first?
I'll luff her when you reach the masthead.
Long Jack climbs up the tall rat lines behind Manuel.
Somebody open the window and let a nice breeze, huh, Jack?
Below on deck. As Disco and Harvey climb higher, the ship rips on through the waves. The rigging lines strain and fray, leaving only string.
Stand by to crew up the fore topsail.
Manuel nimbly steps onto the masthead and positions himself.
Step lively up there now! Clear your way below!
As Manuel swings a kick toward the deck, a wave crashes against the sailors manning the lines at the block and tackles on deck. Now a pulley snaps loose beneath the mainsail. Jack slides down a rope toward the deck. As Manuel ties off a line and turns to follow, the masthead breaks away under him and the mainsail collapses. More block and tackles wrench loose. As Manuel clings to it, the beam of the mast splinters and topples into the sea. The vessel swerves and the ship's wheel spins wildly. Manuel's surface is entangled in ropes.
Manuel! Manuel!
Manuel grimaces in the water. Harvey sees him.
Get a dory over, Ty! Are you all right, Manuel? Can you work free?
Manuel shakes his head, mouthing the word no. Harvey watches.
Oh, yeah, Doc! Good thing, Manuel. Good thing. He's cruzado hoje da Aspen. Captain Disco!
We'll get you out of this in a minute, Corner Cortez.
Says he's good as dead. Gone. He knows it.
Why, Doc? Why?
He stove in. All the bottom half of it's gone. But he don't want the kid to know.
You're all right, aren't you, Manuel? You aren't hurt, are you?
Aye, all right, little beast. What's holding up that door?
Disco! Don't put Dory overside. You hear what Doc's...
But we got to free you, Manuel.
No, no, I say don't put Dory overside.
What's he mean? What's the matter, Manuel? Manuel!
Harvey crawls out on the fallen mast.
Find the boy!
No, not out here. Go back,
Lucy. You're all right, aren't you? You are fat, are you, Manuel?
Aye, all right. Get that dory in the water.
The men shove the dory overboard.
I can't do nothing, Disco. He's falling the backstay.
Manuel!
Harvey climbs under the dory.
Quick, Disco. You'll have to cut him loose or it'll take him in half.
We ain't gotten loose unless it's going to help you free Manuel.
You cut him away, Disco, you hear me?
Get me an axe!
No, Captain Disco! No!
You can cut that line, it'll carry him under. We can't just keep him out there. The line saws him in half. Get me an axe!
Manuel grimaces. Harvey looks on tearfully.
Oh.
Disco lifts an axe and chops at the line, wrapping the splintered beam.
Sorry about race, Disco. You beat him next year, huh?
Waving off Manuel, Disco raises his axe. Harvey looks down at the man in the water.
Manuel!
Now listen, you fish. I go now and fish with my bud. Remember, I tell you, he keeps sea for me in his boat.
What are you talking about? You're not going. We'll save you.
We have good times together, they little fish. We laugh, we sing. So you smile now.
Come, Jack can fix it. You'll be all right, see, Manuel?
Sure. Manuel, he'd be watching you. You'll be best fisherman ever, little.
Harvey shakes his head.
Oh, no, Manuel, no!
Disco's final axe stroke severs the rope.
Manuel!
Holding his nose, Manuel ducks his head underwater. Harvey reaches down and struggles to pull him back. As Disco and the crew look on, Jack restrains the boy. Shaking his head at the foamy water, tears and sea spray glisten on Harvey's face. He sobs into his coat sleeve. Now the We're Here docks near other small ships, and the crew climbs out of the hatch. Harvey stands at the rail looking out to sea.
Well, goodbye again, Harvey. Come on, sailor.
A woman on the gangway hands Nate the baby in her arms. As Harvey sadly glances up at them, Long Jack emerges from the hatch counting his money. He stops beside Harvey.
Are we gonna get your pay, Harv?
I guess so. You're leaving too, huh, Long Jack?
Yep.
Jack reaches into his pocket.
Oh, you'll begin to grow whiskers right soon. I thought maybe this might be a good thing for you to start in with.
It's Manuel's razor.
Thanks. Thanks, Long Jack.
You've just got fuzz now, but if you start scraping them off, they'll toughen up and get like... Fair weather, Harvey.
Long Jack leaves.
Bye, Long Jack.
Alone on deck, Harvey opens the case with Manuel's razor. He fingers the box of blades, then snaps the case shut and pockets it as Dan approaches with a bundle of clothes.
I got everything, I guess.
Yeah. Say, Dan, these clothes, I guess I kind of wore them out some.
Oh, that's all right.
Well, Dan, I'd like to keep them. But I can't pay you out of my pay yet because, well, there's something I sort of wanted to do. So I was just thinking...
There ain't no hurry. Your pop can settle it with my mom when he gets here. See, is he really flying out here all that way? All in one day?
I guess so.
Dan crams his clothes in his bag.
Sure got the laugh on all of us, him having all that money you said he had and everything.
Say, Dan, when somebody... I mean, when something happens to somebody, what do they do with the rest of their things?
Their family get them, I suppose, or whatever kin they have.
Well, did he have any kin?
No, not that anybody knowed of.
Well...
Harvey fingers the hurdy-gurdy.
If someone liked someone a great deal, and he didn't have any kin, that would sort of make them a kin, almost, wouldn't it? And, well, if they had something like this, for instance, that wasn't worth a lot...
Well, I don't know, Harvey. You better ask Pop about that. He'd know more about that.
Oh.
Now in Disco's cabin.
Well, boy, come to get your pay?
Hey,
our deal when you signed on.
Setting down the hurdy-gurdy, Harvey studies Disco's ledger. The final entry reads, Manuel Fidello, deceased, $300 contribution to Fisherman's Home.
Fisherman's Home?
Yeah. That's where the poor and old and crippled of us sat on a sunny porch and tried to outlie each other. Manuel wanted that way.
Harvey takes his pay.
You wouldn't have a better idea, you think?
Well, he wanted to get a... candlestick for his father with two places. How much would that cost?
$2 or $3, I reckon, here.
Oh, then that's all right. I have enough. What'll you do with the rest of Manuel's things, Captain Disco?
We'll send him up along to the home, I guess.
Does this have to go?
He holds the hurdy-gurdy. Oh,
I know, Harvey. I thought maybe you'd like to keep that.
Harvey smiles.
Your daddy will be here directly. You're kind of stretching to see him, ain't you?
Yes, sir. When are you going out fishing again?
In about 6 weeks when we're ship-shape or off.
Well, will Dan go too?
No, it's a winter season. Dan will stay here ashore, school.
Then you'll need someone to take his place, won't you?
Yes, sir. Need a good hand to take Dan's place.
Well, I was thinking, maybe I'm not quite good enough yet. But Manuel said I was getting... Manuel said...
Well, son?
Well, Manuel taught me so much, I know I could. And if you'll take me along, I'll...
Well, now, there's nobody I'd rather sign than you, Harvey. But ain't you kind of forgetting all the lost time you and your daddy have to catch up with each other? You'll want to berth alongside him for some time to come, won't you?
Yes, sir, but...
Harvey!
He has lots to do. And I like being a fisherman. I've been thinking about it. I want to be as good a one as... I mean, I want to stay here with you on the Weir here and...
Harvey! Hi, Harvey! Where are you? It's Father!
There's your daddy now, ain't it?
Yes, sir. So if you'll tell me now whether I can...
Harvey!
Mr. Chain enters.
Hello, Father.
The man takes his son in his arms.
Harvey, son.
Harvey smiles weakly.
Well, well. My boy again.
Now at Disco's house.
So you see, Harvey, by leaving early tomorrow morning, we'd get the sleeper plane out of Boston.
Yes, sir.
You'll like the sleeper plane. It's great. Big berths and everything, just like a Pullman.
I know, but look, Father.
What?
I was thinking that if maybe I could go somewhere on a boat.
All right. I was going to put the yacht up for the winter, but we might take her out and go to Bermuda.
Oh, I didn't mean the yacht. I meant the...
Disco leans toward them.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Well, you see, the plane would get us to the ranch in time for the rodeo after the roundup. You'd like that, wouldn't you, son?
But there's no fishing out there, is there?
The best trout fishing in the world. And if I do say it myself, I can teach you to cast a fly wherever you want to put one.
Yeah, I read about that kind of fishing once in a magazine. Manuel said that any fish that ate a bug was some kind of a frog.
Who's Manuel? He sounds like a pretty funny sort of person.
He's the man that picked Harvey out of the water.
Well, I certainly want to meet that man, Captain Troop. Where is he?
He's dead, Mr. Chain.
Harvey gets up from the table.
Where are you going, son?
Just out. I'll be back in a little while.
Don't you want me to go with you?
No. I mean, I'll be back in a little while. Really, I will.
Well, I guess that's all the Vickles. Will you come in the parlor and chat a while?
Yes.
Disco takes out his pipe as they move to the parlor.
Where was he going, Captain Drew?
Oh, I reckon he has a couple of errands to do. Will you have a pipe? I got some pretty fairish tobacco here.
No, thanks.
Have a chair. That was fine pie, Mother.
Thank you, Discobulus. I'll leave the dish supply.
Dad, is this boom set in here just right?
Dan brings a model ship.
Well, let's see now.
Chain shifts on his feet.
Captain Troop, tell me, that hurdy-gurdy and the razor, were they Manuel's?
Yes, they was, Mr. Chain.
He must have been a pretty fine man. Harvey's a fine boy now, the kind of boy I'd always hoped he'd be.
Yes, they was real dory mates, Mr. Chain.
Yes, I had that chance once. I'm afraid I threw it away. Now that I got the chance again, I...
Looking away from Disco, Chain adjusts his cuffs.
Well, I guess I'm just getting what I deserve.
Well, as long as you set your course a little too late, maybe Manuel sailed it for you. But that don't say you can't sail it after him. You're still the boy's dad, man. Boy's never too old not to need a dad. You just hold a hawser out to him. Someday he's going to lay onto it and pull you right into his heart. When you do get in there, you will find Manuel mighty satisfactory company. Yes, sir. Sure you won't change your mind, have a pipe, Mr. Chain?
No, thanks, Captain Troop. I I think I'll take a little walk, if you'll excuse me.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Stroll up by the church, maybe.
Yes, it's mighty pretty there this time of evening.
Now in a church, Harvey strikes a match and lights three candles. Two candles are in an elegant silver candelabra, and a single one stands on an ornate candle holder. Behind him, a priest watches.
That one is from Manuel to his father.
Yes, my son.
He lights the other.
And that one is from me to Manuel.
The priest looks on as Harvey looks at his candles.
Do you think they're good enough? I only had $9.
Oh, I know they are.
Hat in hand, Mr. Chain strides into the church and sees his son near the altar. Harvey slowly turns toward the priest.
What do I do now?
Would you like to kneel here and pray?
Can I say anything?
Anything.
Do you have to stay here?
No, my son.
He pats Harvey on the shoulder, then turns and genuflects at the altar. As the priest goes into the vestibule, Harvey stands at the communion rail, then kneels. His father watches, leaning on a pew at the back of the church. Harvey bows, then looks up toward the altar.
Look, I guess you have an awful lot of things to do, taking care of everybody. Look, if it is that way, the way Manuel said, could you fix it so someday there'll be an extra seat in Manuel's father's story with him and Manuel? Because I just got to be with Manuel. I got to.
Mr. Chain stares sadly at his son.
I guess that's all I wanted to ask. So please.
Tears well in Harvey's eyes. As he gets to his feet and strides out the church's side door, his father's gaze follows him. Now in a dory moored in the moonlit harbor, Harvey huddles against the small boat's wooden seat. Mr. Chain crosses the deck of the We're Here and descends a ladder to the platform next to the dory. On his knees, he turns toward his son.
Harvey.
He reaches out and pulls the dory closer to the platform and gazes down at his son.
Harvey, son.
Harvey lifts his head, fidgeting with his sleeve.
I just wanted to get out in the air for a little while.
Go ahead, son. Let her go. I know about it. I know about many.
Please, please go away.
Chain grips his son's shoulders.
Harvey, we haven't talked much before, have we? But we can start now. We can talk this over. We can talk over everything from now on, can't we, son?
You'd better go off to the house. I'll be back in a little while. Really, I will.
No, let me stay here with you. Maybe I can help.
Jane starts to climb into the boat.
Come here to your dad, son. I don't mind your crying.
Please, please don't get in this boat. This is Manuel's story. Manuel's mine.
Chain backs away.
I know it hurts, son. But you won't always feel like this. Well, just think, tomorrow you'll be on that big sleeper plane. Before you know it, you'll be flying right over the tops of the Rocky Mountains.
I don't want to go anywhere but here. I want to stay here and go fishing the way Manuel did. I want to be where Manuel is.
Harvey. Son, won't you listen? I'm lonely, too.
Please go away. I'll be all right. If you'll please let me alone. Please.
As Harvey buries his face into his hands, his father slowly withdraws and leaves. Daytime. Men lay a wreath on a stone memorial. Its inscription reads, "They that go down to the sea in ships, 1623 to 1923. Our view pulls back, revealing a statue atop the stone base. The life-size statue is of a fisherman with an upturned face. The fisherman grips the hand pins of a ship's wheel. Around it, hundreds of people solemnly face the monument. Some hold wreaths. On a platform elevated above the heads of the gathering, two men look on. One man wears a clerical collar, the other a three-piece suit. Behind the platform, a metal railing tops a stonework embankment falling to the sea. The suited man lifts his bowed head.
And so we are met here today.
facing the open sea on three points of the compass, to pay tribute to the men who have sailed from this port and gone down to that sea never to return. For three centuries, women and children of Gloucester men have stood upon this shore and cried, "There go the ships." This year, as every year, there are those that have waited in vain. It shall be ever thus. In years to come, women of Gloucester shall watch and wait, sending their prayers and faith to men over the horizon, men whose every day is one of life and labor uncertain, but men of strong faith in themselves, in their ships, and in the God who is on land and sea. So to those of these men whose last resting place is beneath the sea they love, we pay our humble tribute as we cast these wreaths and flowers upon the waters of their outgoing tide.
He tosses a bouquet of flowers into the sea. As they drift away in the current, he reads,
"George Appleton."
A man tosses a wreath into the water, a young girl, another.
"William Barry Chester."
A woman tosses flowers.
"Alan Robert Cass."
An old couple cast a small wreath.
"Zachary Benjamin Dennis."
A black woman with two children brings a bouquet.
"Winston Ellery."
A weeping family toss more flowers.
"Michael Farnsworth."
A woman and a girl each cast a bouquet.
"Manuel Fidello."
Disco and his family cast flowers.
"Harry Gunderson."
Mr. Chain makes his way through the crowd to the rail.
"John Frederick Ephraim."
Harvey tosses a wreath.
"Lute Ellison."
His father joins him and casts another wreath.
"Dave Miller."
The two wreaths float away together.
"Henry Barker."
Harvey takes his father's hand.
"Thomas Walton."
Hands clenched together, they stare down at the sea.
"Augustus Nelson."
Harvey gazes up into his father's eyes.
"Phineas Sawyer."
Mr. Chain places his arm around Harvey and kisses him on the forehead. Later, along a country road, a wooden dory mounted on a flatbed trailer zips past the trees and fields. In the passenger seats of the limousine pulling it, Mr. Chain watches and laughs at Harvey's animated demonstration of a story. The boy extends his hands wide, then even wider. Over the speeding limousine, an image of Manuel's smiling face turns to us. As the fisherman's monument looms into view against a cloudy sky, words appear. The end. Fade to black.